Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this spiritual fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all.
You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us.
Hello, and welcome to Season 7, Episode 1 of This Spiritual Fix. We are starting off the new by ending the year. Enjoy this summary of all we've learned.
Hypnosis. Mindfulness. Meditation. Past life regression.
RTT.
Spirituality.
This spiritual fix. Two mystical mamas hacking the self-help game.
With Anna Stromquist
and Christina Wiltsey.
Hey Christina, how are you?
I'm good. You are getting over a cold right now, and you are doing an amazing thing by recording the episode today. Let me just like point that out to everybody right now.
I feel so much better though.
Oh good. I'm so glad.
Yeah. So what are we talking about today, Chris?
We are doing our end of year episode. We, for those of you who may have missed it in a past episode, we talked about how going forward with season 7, it took us over a year to do season 6 because we obviously had a very large hiatus where Anna and I had to kind of we had a separation, a hiatus in our friendship, and then ended up coming back and doing mediation, which was like incredibly valuable. For me, I feel like I'm like learning so much about myself. And so we finished up the season and then we said, okay, well, we're just going to do episodes when we're like inspired to do it. And we want to like connect with one another again, because for those of you who've been listening the whole time, know that we started the podcast because we live far away from each other, a couple hours from each other. And the podcast is a wonderful way for us to connect again when we have the busyness of our daily lives. So this marks the beginning of season 7, or just a bonus episode, depending on how you look at it. Right, Anna?
Yes. So yeah, we're going to just talk about end of the year, major insights we've had, we think, for this year. We just kind of like don't know. I called it the theme of the podcast. He's like, oh, you've had some insights this year? And I'm like, oh, what? Like, haven't I changed a lot? He's like, oh yeah, you have.
Like my Luke, my husband, said to me, he's like, I was really impressed with you on Thanksgiving because you wanted to try and control stuff and then you just didn't, and you just like left. I was like, yeah, well, it helped that I had people that I could just go off and be like, we're just gonna hang out and not care about when anything starts. Like, we're just gonna peace out. He was like, I was really impressed by that. And then a couple of days later, you got really like kind of in a bad place, and I was worried that maybe this new thing that you're trying is going to get you into that new place. I was like, no, I just got dehydrated. I was like, I can attribute my insights now to dehydration.
So did you do the cooking, or he did the cooking?
He did everything. He cooked the entire day.
Wow.
On Wednesday, cooked the entire like half day on Thursday. He did everything. I made dressing, which is the Southern equivalent of stuffing, and I made deviled eggs, which is also very Southern. So yeah.
So before we start our episode, Chris, what do you want to talk about for the prelude?
So I want to just, it's so funny. Have you ever heard the terminology when somebody says my Roman Empire is? Have you ever heard people say that before?
Yes.
Right?
It's like, because it came from like men being obsessed with the Roman Empire and women never think about it.
Yeah. And so when somebody's like, what's the thing that you regularly think about all the time? I thought this was interesting. I don't know if I think about this all the time, but I do think it's like a very, very interesting thing. Dean Radin, who's one of the main advisors for the Institute of Noetic Science, which is all about the studying of psi phenomenon. They did a study about the genetic makeup of people who are psychic versus not, right? And so they had a control group of people who had never shown any psychic abilities or kind of tested positively for, you know, any of the psi phenomenon having them present. And then they tested everybody who did have psychic phenomenon, right? Like they had psychic abilities. And it was interesting because their hypothesis was that the people who had psychic abilities would have a different genetic makeup, right? That they would have extra stuff that the normal population doesn't have, right? And that there would be something very, very specific for how that shows up in their life, like kind of like X-Men, like, oh man, they're mutants and therefore they have these psi abilities. But what they found was that it was actually the control group that didn't show any psychic phenomenon that actually ended up being the anomalous people, right? In the sense, they were the mutants. The people who did not have psychic abilities were the mutants. And they found that they could trace back the anomalous non-psychic genetic code, the genetic composition, to the Holy Roman Empire. So they kind of went down this rabbit hole and recognized that things like the Spanish Inquisition, as an example, where they basically burned, what, you know, like 200,000 witches, that effectively the Spanish Inquisition was by like singling out people with this psychic ability, they basically single-handedly changed the entire genetic composition of the entire population and basically bred out psychic phenomenon. And then those people became very prevalent, right? So what you would say now of like, oh, there's people who, you know, have psychic abilities and don't, that the people who don't are a remnant of this effectively, you couldn't call it a purposeful eugenics. I don't know if it was purposeful eugenics, but effectively the concept of that, of like, we want to breed people who are non-psychic. And they killed everybody who was psychic so that they could no longer breed. And it changed the entire human population. I just thought it was like completely fascinating to me that was actually had such a massive impact on human population. Cause I would say that psychic phenomenon allow us to be more sensitive. They allow us to be more compassionate, right? Because we can feel and see and everything that everybody else is going for. So it naturally leads to a more compassionate population.
So I wonder if it's also not just that they killed a lot of psychic people, but that a lot of the psychic people were forced to flee. I'm guessing because we still have psychic people around. So like they just didn't come out of Spain or, you know, Western Europe. You know?
Right. So if you were to think of the Spanish Inquisition as extending beyond Spain into a systematic policy that the Holy Roman Empire had to basically reject, excommunicate, or kill anybody who had any psychic ability, then there are some estimates for the Spanish Inquisition that's 30,000 to 300,000. Some people say it's only like 1% of that killed during the Spanish Inquisition of the policies that, you know, that were effectively based on the book that was, you know, that basically said, you know, this is the way that we test for witches, like that whole experience of it. And there's going to be historians who are listening to us who are being like, oh my God, you guys are butchering this. But that's the whole idea, right? Is that the Inquisition did not just exist in Spain. It started in Spain. It was the worst in Spain, but it actually was everywhere that the Holy Roman Empire had influence. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is. I was also thinking it was really interesting that I was just talking with my sister about this yesterday, about this idea that like, I think that the witch tendencies, if you want to call it witch tendencies, have a tendency to go down to the first born more so than anything else, which is why, because I was like thinking about it and I was like, I know that I'm a witch, but my daughter so strongly connects with being a witch, whereas like I feel a lot less so. And I feel like my sister, who's oldest, connects a lot with being a witch as well. And I do think that there's something with like firstborn inheriting a lot of those qualities, but also a lot of the witch wound and the trauma associated with all of those executions and all of the kind of things of like, I can't show myself. I can't like let myself out there. I have to hide who I am sort of experience, right? Whereas I don't think I've ever really had a really predominant. I'm afraid of getting put in an insane asylum. I'm not afraid of getting burnt at the stake. So, Anna, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll just say that I think I got a greater handle on how my brain works this year and understanding how I require dopamine hits in small packages, if that makes sense. Like, for example, I got that Me app, which is an ADHD app, to-do list, calendar thing. And it really helps me. For example, laundry has been one of my biggest mental blocks. It's my Holy Roman Empire, you could say. And I have not yet figured out a way to tackle this up until now, because it's always the last chore that I do. And it's something I just kind of dread doing. So I learned that if I break it into, instead of one task, which is laundry, I would break it down into three tasks. It would be, wash, fold, put away. So then I had three chances of hitting a dopamine hit. Well, I've broken it down further and I'm like, wash the first load, wash the second load, wash the third load, fold half, fold the other half, put half away, put the other half away. And then suddenly, instead of one task or three tasks, it now becomes six or seven tasks, like just breaking it down into smaller pieces that I can check mark. And somehow being able to check mark off those smaller pieces gives me that dopamine hit I need and the confidence that I need to know that I can do it. Ironically, gets it done faster because it doesn't seem so daunting to tackle. Another thing that's really helped me this year, understanding my mind, is that book, Atomic Habits. And if you go back to that episode, I talk a lot about habit stacking, which is the author talks about you stack a new habit on top of a habit that you already do instead of just starting cold turkey and starting a habit, rather than starting a whole new habit, being like, okay, in the morning, after I have my morning chai or coffee, whatever, I'm going to speed clean for 15 minutes and then stack something on top of that instead of just being like, I'm going to do this thing today. It's really hard, but if you stack it on top of an already established habit, it's just so much more doable. And understanding also the importance of the environment. In the Atomic Habits book, he talks about setting your environment up for optimization. So if I want to go to the gym tomorrow, putting my gym clothes out or my sneakers right by my door, and that being the first thing I change into when I wake up, or knowing that I want to go to the pool. Don't change when I wake up into clothes, like put the bathing suit on under the clothes, and then I have no excuses. So basically, just setting my environment up for success. So, yeah, that's been what I've been up to mentally this year. And what about you, Chris? What are your major insights in the mental aspects of your life?
Okay, so my major mental insights, well, for one thing, I can't tell you how important it was for my whole family to kind of recognize their neurodivergence and not just me. I kind of led the way on that whole experience because I was, in the whole self-diagnosis TikTok thing for a very long time and kind of understood what it was about me. But I think the thing that I've just been so amazed about is that for one thing, my husband kind of recognizing how ADHD he is and how, and like really coming to terms and healing what that did to him when he was growing up and like all the judgments he made about himself that could be explained by this phenomenon, like could be explained by this disorder, was like extremely helpful for him. And the work that we've done with our kids is that we've worked through their kind of different forms of neurodivergence. One of my kids is more inattentive and the other one's more impulsive. And we kind of are able to match that and do a lot of important things with that. For me, what I find amazing is that the more I was just introduced to, I just started a book club recently. I didn't start it. I was asked to join one that was like well established. And I live in a town full of college professors and a college. And so it's like a book club full of professors and staff. And like, and me and this other woman are kind of the anomalies. Like, we're not associated with the university. But we had like a end of year party and it was my first meeting. And it was really interesting because I noticed how immediately I slipped into the conversation that I was like neurodivergent, possibly autistic. And I literally felt this pressure leave me where I was like, I didn't feel like I had to perform in any different way. And I think the more that I've done that, and I've just been like, even if I'm not even like really, you know, showing up in a, not, I'm not a high support. I don't need high support as an autistic person, but like getting myself off the hook for having to create small talk, right? Even if not everybody understands how to deal with, it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, I kind of write myself off a little bit, that's the wrong way of saying it. I take the pressure off myself to behave in a neurotypical way when I just kind of state that. And it's been so incredible for me because I've started to recognize how much I was masking and even the ways that I wasn't even aware of, right? And I'm starting to notice how much social anxiety I've had for a very long time, even though I can be very gregarious and talk a lot. But like, it just has allowed me to be quiet a lot more in social situations and not talk continually to try and entertain everybody. Like, there's a lot of healing that's gone on for me in that way. And also just like recognizing the anxiety that I've had as a result of that. I've been working a lot with my daughter about anxiety. And you know, I kind of, at this point, we kind of recognize that anxiety is the last thing in a chain of events that happens when you haven't managed to move something in your body. And so everything kind of gets clogged up, and anxiety is that last thing that we're talking about. And so I say that to my daughter, I'm like, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you're thinking about something that you're anxious about, just remember that, like, you know, everything got quiet. And so you could hear what was always going on during the day, right? And like really pointing out the fact that anxiety does exist in a low key place all day long. And like, sometimes you have to go to sleep for a couple of hours and then wake up and have insomnia because all of a sudden that's the only thing that you can hear. How are we dealing with anxiety as well as overstimulation throughout the day so that it doesn't get to this point where it's just so loud when we're either in the middle of the night or during the day? And so all of those things have been really a journey that we've been going on this year, and I've really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. Have you seen any shifts about like the things she says when she wakes up?
So I think so, but that's also because we used to do app time in the morning. Like every morning they would kind of just have like a time to chill out. And I was realizing, we both, Luke and I, knew that it was like not the best thing to do, but it was like, it gave us a chance to wake up and it gave them something to do. And we've stopped doing that. And that has also changed it as well. So the two things changed at the same time. It's hard to say what it is, but we're still kind of working on the anxiety things a little bit, but yeah.
What is your major insight spiritually for this year, or insights?
My major insights have been about the nature of fear and the nature of kind of what I've been doing most of this year with my clients and with myself is kind of taking the villains that we've talked about on kind of numerous different occasions, taking the villains and figuring out where their arcs land them, right? So there's one aspect of a villain's journey. And for those of you who don't know, the villains are based on, they're nine villains, main villains. They correspond to the nine centers in human design, as well as the nine places of the Enneagram. And when we're in our worst form of our villain, we're like, usually a villain to somebody else. We're like what I would call an origin villain. We're like very outwardly kind of nasty. We can be a combination of any of these nine, and we're working to kind of move the villains from their place where they're really in a bad space through their full arc, which usually involves becoming a hero. The hero is kind of doing the opposite of what the villain does, and then becoming the legend, which is the one who's more equanimous, and they've kind of found resolution and they've made peace with this aspect of them. And so for me, the exploration has been as like, what is the kind of legendary form of all these villains, and looking at it inside myself. So things like the inventor, the equalizer, the channeler, the healer. I've been working with myself and others and kind of developing what these look like. And it's like a really beautiful thing because suddenly it feels like I have something that's better than just like, oh, it's the power of now, or it's the whatever. It feels like very similar to how they used to develop character, like Benjamin Franklin and Plato and Aristotle. They all had these virtues that they tried to develop in themselves. It's kind of like that, but I feel like it's more dynamic. than just like, I need to develop temperance. It's like, no, I actually want to develop myself as somebody who sees hierarchies and does my best to kind of address hierarchies. And it's a lot more complex than just like a virtue of temperance, right? So that's been, I mean, that's like a very, very brief explanation of the work that I've been doing with it. And I'll get to this later. I'm developing a deck that describes these arcs, but it's really been wonderful for me because I feel like I have a lot more focus in what I don't want to be, but what I want to be, right? That I'm like being very clear about what I want to become as a spiritual being. It has a lot to do with not only those characteristics and like kind of moving through all my villain arcs, but also like, how am I accessing the eternal, what I call the higher dimensional allies? How am I using gratitude, compassion, and love in my life in a regular basis all the time? And how am I cultivating them and spreading them everywhere I go? So yeah, it's good. I've also had a lot of really strange experiences recently with people. I'm showing up in people's mushroom trips and dreams a lot.
You show up in a lot of my dreams, but I feel like that's common.
I feel like you show up in a lot of my dreams too. I feel like that's common too. But like, I'm just so shocked at where like someone was like, I was on a mushroom journey and you showed up and you were like with me the whole time. And I was like, oh my God, that's so amazing. Like I have
that's
such a
so cool.
My higher self is very busy.
Yeah. I was going to say your cyber self, but no, it's your higher self. That's so cool.
It's cool, right? Yeah. Anyway, what about you, Anna? Spiritual?
A lot of my spirit. Okay. One major spiritual insight I had was like, we talked about in the last episode was just kind of graduating from the need to constantly be doing shadow work. The second thing is actually something my stepdaughter, she's gotten really into Kabbalah and she's taking this online course and I really want to take it. And one of the things she has to ask herself is like, okay, if life is a movie, why is this in my movie? And just kind of like asking yourself that question over and over again, like, if this is a movie, why is this in my movie? Why is this here to teach me? Right. And I really like that approach to like, she's so funny about it though. She'll just be like, my skin just broke out. Why is this in my movie? And then the other thing, kind of related to Kabbalah is something you told me, which was hilarious, is that you and I will send these Reddits to each other sometimes, the Am I the Assholes? And I don't know if you even remember this, but I sent you one and it was like the wife did something really shitty and the husband did something really shitty back. And I was like, do you think he's an asshole? And you were like, yes. And I was like, but he totally was justified to do it. And you were like, yeah, but like, what's the point of life if you're just going to like eye for an eye everyone? Like, can't you take the shitty thing and make it better? And he could have taken what his wife did and then like made it better. I was like, oh, Christina doesn't understand the beauty of revenge. So anyways, but I thought a lot about that and it's so true. Like, what is the point of us being on this earth if we're not going to try to be, you know, like the same Kabbalah to Tikkun Olam, which is like heal the earth or make the world right again. So it's like, yeah, he was totally the asshole because you take the ugly thing and you try to make it better. So anyways, I think that's what I'm trying to do more with my spirituality.
Yeah. It feels really good to do revenge for sure, but it feels better. It feels a lot better to try and transmute everything, right? You were the one who taught me that, right? Yeah. Like when you talked about like using your divine feminine aspect to transmute the negativity in the world. And I think that that's ultimately where we are, is that there may be the perception of a lot of really bad things happening. So how are you transmuting that? How are you turning all the things that are happening in the world into something different? I started channeling recently for YouTube and because I just was called to do it. And I've been channeling my mom and asking her questions. And I channeled Archangel Raphael, who's like one of my favorites to channel. And it was interesting because one of the questions that somebody asked was like, what is the purpose of war? And the ultimate last thing he said was the purpose of war was to awaken humanity. And I was like, that's a really interesting perspective on it, because I feel like most people wouldn't say that.
I love that. Mm-hmm. So what about physical? What have you learned the most out of the physical body?
I'm on the cusp of my lesson with this one. I'm right there. I actually, if can you believe this, Anna? This is the most ridiculous thing ever. For Christmas, I had to create a Christmas list, and I actually asked for a piece of exercise equipment for Christmas.
Oh, what kind of equipment was that?
It? I asked for a rowing machine because I was like, I've always enjoyed rowing. The most of the time that I've done all of my spiritual work, it's been in the etheric realm, which everyone can imagine. It's like everything that exists in your mind's eye. The last quarter, I've been working a lot on astral travel and realizing that in order to have an out-of-body experience, you have to have a body experience. You have to have an in-body experience. And so it's been a really big challenge for me. I've had the spontaneous experiences in the past, but it's been a really big challenge for me. So I've been really tapped into my physical and finding the door in my actual physical body and actually like really starting to honor my physical and recognizing that I have only a certain amount of time and I really need to take care of this body. So I like I said, right on the cusp of that thing, like having gained more weight for whatever reason than I ever have before because I skipped gardening this spring. I'm just
Oh, you
like,
did?
I
Oh, yeah.
did.
That's
Because I
right.
went to Italy and I skipped gardening this spring.
Eat,
Italy. And I ate a lot.
eat.
And so I just really am appreciating my physical body and like getting to know it a little bit better. What about you, Anna?
I love that. Physical body. This year, I think this was the first year since I gave birth that, like 10 years ago or 11, 12 years ago, that I consistently made it to the gym 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and instead of doing my Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, like light workouts, which would usually just be walking, I'd actually swim laps. And like now that it's colder, I'm only swimming laps once a week because it's just hard to change at the gym and all that, and your hair is wet and all that. So, anyways, but that. It's been a good year for me working out wise. But the reason why, again, is going back to Atomic Habits, which is just like that book really helped me with my habits. Like one thing is that over Thanksgiving, without fail, the week of Thanksgiving and then the week of Thanksgiving, I always kind of fall off the fitness wagon. And then the week after, I inevitably always get sick because there's so many grandchildren and stuff at my parents, or just the stress of traveling, and like I'm just overcoming that post-Thanksgiving cold right now, and like that usually leads me to not working out. But I stayed on it. Like I used to have this mental block that was, if I don't work out before noon, I'm fucked for the whole day. Like I won't ever work out because I just can't do it. I don't know why. I just had this like idea. I can't do it, and if I did it, it would keep mess up my sleep schedule. Well, there were times we got into the hotel at like 10 p.m. and I would force myself to go to the hotel gym and just get on the bike for 30 minutes. And I probably did nothing to my body, but I did so much for my mind because I was
Wow.
telling myself, I am a person who is consistent. I am a consistent person. So it was so much about my mind.
That's
So there was
amazing.
that. Yeah. And then the other thing, physical, I didn't know where to put this, but one thing that I keep has been like my mantra, and I guess this is physical because it has to just do with labor, but not like my body. Is, you know that saying, the grass is always greener on the other side? Well, I heard somewhere the grass is greener where you water it.
Yeah, that's
And
good.
I've just been like a lot of been like putting effort into things I want to be better because what I put my effort into will become better. So yeah, grass is greener where you water it. Okay. Emotional, what is your emotional insight peaks for this year?
I feel like the work that we did with the mediation was huge, which basically helped me deal with my avoidance, which I feel like avoidance is simply another way of saying that you are very scared of deep feelings, right? And whether it's a person that brings deep feelings to you or whether it's a conflict that brings deep feelings to you. And so I feel like that was incredibly helpful to address my avoidance. I started talking to my mom this year, which was also a very big part of that. I feel like dealing with the abandonment and the betrayal that kind of went along with that and how I grew up was like a really big part of it, in which I like now have a regular conversations with my mom, even with my grandmother, who I had a really contentious relationship with. Interestingly, I just got a letter from my stepmom yesterday. And for those of you who haven't listened, that's probably, I think I've mentioned it in the past that like if there was one piece of resolution that I needed before passing in this earth, it was to create a resolution with her. And she said she had a dream about me, which is totally along those lines. She had a dream about me and she told me that that she had a dream that I was like serving her tea and that she was like, it was really welcome and I was really grateful for it. And I'm in the middle of a community, trying to kind of start community efforts, and there's a bit of strife and difficulty with it. And I'm just starting to realize that, like, so often when somebody is difficult, this is different than abusive. When somebody is difficult, right? Especially when there are two people who are of equal status. To me, abusive is particular when there's like a hierarchy that's been created, whether it's an adult and a child, or whether it's an adult who has control over somebody else. Like you see more abuse happening, whether it's a government to its people or whether it's, you know, whatever. It's like there's a hierarchy in which abuse is allowed, that when you have two adults who are dealing with their own stuff, but they're able to have conversations, it becomes less about abuse and more about just difficult and challenging conversations. And are you willing to do that? When there's no power dynamic, suddenly you don't have to get along with someone, you choose to. And I think that's where I am right now. I feel like I've grown up a lot in the sense that the things that she may have done in the past are no longer what I would consider. If she does it to me now, I don't consider it abuse. If that makes sense, like I can choose how I react to it and I can choose how it settles on me. And I can choose whether or not I want to have a relationship with somebody who feels like they're difficult. I don't know. Does that seem weird? I'm asking your opinion.
Do you think that there's not a power dynamic though, if she's a parent?
I don't think so, because I don't see her as a parent. I don't know if I really ever have, but I mean, in the sense that my life is completely separate from her. I'm not reliant on her for anything. Right. I'm not reliant on either of them for anything. And if I choose to re-engage with a relationship, it's as peers and as friends, or as, you know, family members in which you choose to treat as peers. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like that moment that you said to me during all of that stuff a couple of years ago, when you said, this person is never going to be the family that you hoped that they would be. And like, if you come to terms with that, you're okay. I feel like I'm kind of come to terms with that. I feel like I recognize and trust my own sovereignty that, like, you know, if I choose to be in that relationship, there's no reliance. And when you get rid of the reliability and that gets rid of the power dynamic, which gets rid of the abuse, right? It doesn't get called abuse. It gets called, we're going to have difficult and challenging conversations. Who knows? I might still need to evolve in this, but that's where I
like it. No, I like it.
Yeah.
And difficult and challenging people and conversations are part of life. They're in our movie for a reason.
Exactly. Exactly. And mine's been in my movie as a main character for many, many years. And I need to address that. What about you?
Emotionally also, I think I got a lot out of the mediation stuff. And one of the like key mantra were like phrases that came from that was, is it worth it? Just like, if I get upset quickly or I react quickly or strongly, is it worth it? Is it worth the bridge I burn? Is it worth the drama that's created? Is it worth me feeling bad all day about how I said something? Is it worth it? Has kind of stopped me in the tracks a lot, although not always. I found this really good Instagram reel that said 10 questions that will stop every conflict in its tracks by Ken Milovanov. And I just thought it had so much to do with what we went through. And I want to just read it because I think it's a lot of what we kind of went through. Yep. Number one is saying to someone, this is during conflict, that didn't feel good. What was your intention? Instead of assuming malice, this question invites the other person to explain their perspective. It promotes understanding and reduces defensiveness. Number two, I'm feeling defensive. Can you share that point in another way? It acknowledges your feelings without placing blame while asking for a more constructive tone to keep the conversation open and respectful. Number three, when you said that, I thought it meant blank. Can you clarify? This opens the door for clarification and reduces misunderstandings, ensuring you address what was actually meant. Number four, are we working toward understanding each other or are we just trying to win? This shifts from who's right to mutual resolution, reminding both parties of the goal to connect rather than compete. And I like that because another way of putting that is we're on the same team. Like, can we come to a resolution that works for both of us because we're on the same team? It's not me against you. Yeah. Chris, my throat really hurts. Could you read the rest of them?
And so I'm going to take over. Number five, can you help me understand what you need right now? Invites the other person to express their needs, creating space for empathy and practical problem solving. And I think that this is important for both people. It's not just the person who's brought up the conflict, but also the other person to say, because sometimes somebody needs to be like, I don't want to feel like I'm not in a space to be able to do this. So being able, like right now, I can't do this. So what I need is to not feel attacked right now. They're going to find out what it is that they need, which really gets to the heart of what it is that we're talking about and opens up the space for what is actually necessary. Six, do you feel like I'm truly listening to you? This shows you care about the voice being heard and gives them the chance to share if they're feeling ignored or misunderstood. I feel like this is a good way of doing it. Also, active listening is a really good way of doing that, right? And recognizing if you're being perceived as not actively listening. Seven, is this a misunderstanding or is there a deeper issue we need to talk about? It encourages both of you to identify whether the conflict is about the immediate situation or unresolved issues beneath the surface. I think ultimately this one, when I read it, I was like, it would be really lovely if people could have that understanding. But sometimes it takes time and space away from somebody to understand if there is a deeper issue. Parts work is really great for this because sometimes you can be like, oh, this part is coming up. And that's like an easy way to recognize there's a deeper issue. But ultimately, what we need to understand with that is that there may be a deeper issue, but that doesn't mean that the conflict isn't relevant. Or that doesn't mean that the conversation that doesn't need to be had just because somebody's old stuff is getting brought up. Eight, what can we both do to make this feel less hurtful? Promotes shared accountability and collaboration and finding a solution that respects both sides. That goes again with that team. We're a team. How are we making this better? Nine, if the roles were reversed, how would you feel in my position? Inspires perspective taking, helping the other person empathize with your experience and soften their stance. And 10, what's the one thing you wish I would understand better about this? It creates a safe space for the other person to express their core feelings, allowing for a deeper understanding and resolution. Anna's being a champ, y'all.
I haven't talked in 3 days. That's probably why. I think those questions are great and you can't always ask them, but you know, I saw this and it's like, there's always a way to ask for something you need kindly, you know? Mm.
That's what I've been really emphasizing is I'm just like kind looks at the timing and it looks at the tone, if nothing else. And it looks at those two things primarily. Nice is often comes across as fake, right? Like I'm just like pretending that this is there. Kind says, I'm actually going to deliver difficult news maybe, but I'm making sure that the time is right. And sometimes the time is never right, but you're preparing somebody for it. So I'm checking the timing and I'm also checking my tone. And the tone is oftentimes governed by that. You know, did you see that meme, Anna? That was so funny. It was like, I'm overstimulated and I'm parenting. And the kid's like, hey, mommy. And the mom's like, what? And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. And she like tries to correct the what. And she's like, let me try that again. And she goes, what? In the exact same way. It's like, she can't change her tone on her like response to her kid. She's like, it's hilarious because she keeps redoing it to the point where she's like trying to change the way it sounds, but it's fundamental that the tone is being dictated by the fact that she's overstimulated and can't pretend to be like, what, honey? You know, like she can't get into that other frame of mind. So it's, tone is important.
And timing is so important. Like I can ask my husband a certain question and if the timing's wrong, I'm getting a no. And then another time I'm getting a hell yes. And just knowing like being reading the room, like, is it a good time to ask for that favor or whatever? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Post-orgasm, great time to ask for things. I mean, that's all right. So family, this is what we learn with family. So I found that with family, One of the things that I think I have always struggled with a lot, and this is something that I think happens when you grow up with lots of ACEs or lots of childhood trauma, is that you start to want to police everybody around you that you love because you want to protect them from something that could happen to them. And you start to, you know, and I think that that's a really difficult place to be in because we start to recognize that that's not necessarily what we want to happen, because ultimately we're kind of protecting them from a version of us that has become an internalized villain. What has happened in my life that has made it so that I feel really good is about my family life and how everything works, is I've really kept out of all of my family's, I call it their inner solar system, right? Like, inner solar system is like, if you want to look at it actually with planets, Mercury is like their inner thought. It's like their hermetic body. It's like how they think about things in their kind of higher spiritual body. The, you know, their Venus, which is their much more elemental experience, right? It's like their wild divine feminine is their Venus. Their Earth, which is their physical, which is harder to stay out of with kids, but, you know, recognizing that they need to make their own bodily autonomy choices. And then the Moon, which is more of like an emotional. And then Mars, which is mental. That's like the inner solar system. And I really have worked hard to, especially with my husband, to just like honor his journey and wherever it was and not make it so that his journey is going to make or break my journey. The more that I take my own boundaries into account, the less I have to go into his inner solar system and say that this, he has to change. And if he doesn't change, then I'm not going to be happy. So that's been really wonderful for me.
I like that. Well, for me, we had a huge life-changing event happen in October. One of my children got really sick. I won't go into the details because that's their story to tell, but there was a 36-hour period where we were given four possible diagnoses, and two of them were fatal. One of them would be a lifelong disability, and one would have been just like a short-term disability. We prayed and prayed and prayed, and oh my God. It's just the short-term disability one. So that being said, like having 36 hours to stare at your child and be like, are they going to die? Was like, I'm talking about it from a very detached point of view right now. Cause if I go into it, I'll just start bawling. It's like very, it's still really hard, but, it was like the 36 most terrifying hours of my life. And it was also a familiar feeling because it was the same feeling I got when I was told my mom wasn't going to wake up. And it just really shifted my whole perspective. Like, there's friends and they're like, where have you been? Like, there's people I would call on a weekly basis or text on a daily basis, and they've just like disappeared completely from my life because I just, my focus has just been so much on my family right now. That child still needs a lot of support. So there's like, the time and physicality of like my attention, it needs to be on them, but also just my attention in general has just shifted a lot more to just my family and not just my child. My dad had his 80th birthday this year, and he's in amazing shape. He went laser tagging with my nieces and nephews the following day. Like, he's in excellent shape. When we go for walks together, I'm like, Dad, slow down. And he's like, why? I can handle this. You think I can't handle this because I'm old? And I'm like, no, I can't keep up with you. Like, he works out 1 to 2 hours a day. He's in incredible shape. He's like my hero for fitness. Mm. But also, like, this year I feel like has just really kind of made me realize mortality more and just how important those family connections are. So like, I want to spend more time with my family, my nieces, my nephews, my brothers, my sister, my parents, my kids, just like, that's kind of that like huge event. Those 3 days in CHOA, Children's Hospital of Atlanta, by the way, is awesome. They take great care, but it just completely, it's like my life is going in this one way, and then this event happened, and then it just like did a 90 degree angle. Like, I couldn't have cared less the outcome of the elections. I just wanted my child to be okay, you know, like just everything.
Yeah,
everything kind of whatever.
It was such
so a, that's yeah. been It was just crazy. It was just like, it was
especially
just crazy.
In all the days leading up to it when you were like asking, we were like, what's
like,
going
on? Like, what is
this?
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, as a physical therapist, I have seen this diagnosis before, but it's so freaking rare that it didn't even cross my mind that that was what was going on. And then as soon as the doctor's like, oh, well, they don't have reflexes and this and that, we're going to spinal tap. I'm like, oh my God, it's clearly this, but whatever. No breathing support was needed. No ICU was needed. Like we really got lucky, but yeah, it's just completely changed my prerogatives and like who I spend my time with, not even consciously, not to call someone. It's just like, I'm completely forgotten about them. My whole focus is just on my family now.
Which is just, that's a beautiful reorientation. I feel like it's your energy is, it's so much more collected, right? Than it ever was before. Now, when I talk to you, right? That your attention, even your attention is like not as scattered. It's like very collected.
Yes. I feel a lot more grounded from it. It just kind of threw me off my feet and I, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Last topic, work, occupational things.
Yes. I've invested a lot of money into my business and turning it, technically someone said to me once, well, your business isn't a business. It's a practice. It's not a business. Because if you go away, the business goes away. It's like, yeah, okay. It's practice. Totally. 100%.
Who told you that? That's interesting. Brandon?
Yes.
Okay.
My financial advisor friend who does all sorts of stuff on conscious wealth. He's like, it's a practice, not a business. That's okay. But I experimented with a lot of things, did a lot of things and started collaborating with other people. And if you're someone like me, who's very ADHD, very avoidant in general, like kind of wants to dabble in a lot of things, but not actually commit to things. This has been the year for me to invest in my business, get other people involved that hold me accountable. And it's been absolutely incredible for my focus and stuff like that. At this point, I need to manage my stress a little bit better. And I need to probably outsource a lot more things. But in general, I've been working on this inner villain deck, which I mentioned. It's an inner villain transformation oracle. And we're going to do a Kickstarter with it in March. And I have my creative consultant. She's like my creative director. She's doing all the artwork and oil paintings for all the different cards, which is really beautiful. And I have somebody else in my community who's helping with the project management. And they're really helping me move through the arcs. There's 54 cards and there are 9 suits. There are 9 villains that, and their full arcs are expressed in a series of 6 cards. So you can kind of pick a card and that card can represent, it gives you like, what is the thing that you can do if you're stuck in the perfectionist, for instance, or if you're stuck in the banker, right? Which, you know, is the codependent, like the one who's like constantly banking and creating transactions for whatever. If you're stuck in the entertainer, if you always go to parties, like I mentioned earlier, and you're always trying to entertain, but you become totally drained afterwards, how do you invert those so that you're actually in a better place and you're not, you know, you're not stuck in that space, you're able to kind of move through that arc? You know, what is the kind of great truth that sits behind it? What's the strategy? Like, why did you start doing that in the first place? It's just all these things. And I love it. It's exactly what I'm meant to be doing. And I feel so good about it. And it feels really good to actually be working to create something in the physical world, not just conversations and the work that I do with clients, even though that's an amazing thing as well.
When are they going to be published and where would we find them?
So they're going to be on Kickstarter first. So I'm going to run a Kickstarter campaign to help do that. And then I'm assuming that they're probably going to come out around August of next year. Play Conscious Publishers, which is my company, is going to publish them. And they're using the Kickstarter to help fund all the marketing and all the different, you know, the development of them themselves. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Well, this year, my job hasn't changed much. Most of my job is really just understanding how to connect with people and motivate them to actually do their homework and actually be brave during therapy, you know, walk again, whatever. So that work is just the same, but I have been better about being more direct at asking for bills. Like like I used to just, if someone wasn't paying their bill, just let it build up, build up, build up. And then like now I've just been like, hey, your bill is 3 months overdue. We're going to have to pause therapy if you don't pay at least half your bill, or can we set up a billing plan? Like I'm just being more direct because I've just been so flighty about the money part, which it's annoying. And that's just for co-pays. Like obviously insurance pays for the majority of it, but there's that. Then the other thing is, and this is my job because my husband is really the primary breadwinner, and my major contribution to the home is keeping it tidy and making the meals. And I love to cook. I told Christina, I got my weekly grocery bill down to maybe half and maybe even less than half of what it used to be. I mean,
okay, I'll just the amount. Yeah. Fucking ridiculous, guys.
I'll just be transparent. First of all, I only buy quality meat. So I was only buying my meats from Sprouts or Whole Foods because I only cook meat twice a week. We might eat it 3 or 4 times a week, but like, I always want like high quality meat. It's just like a thing. And then I try to get as much organic things as possible. And then one of my kids is gluten-free and those things are expensive. So I'm spending $150 to $200, $250 sometimes a week on groceries for my family. And keep in mind, I cook every night of the week, like once or twice a month we do takeout. So I've been doing this thing and now my weekly grocery bill is like $75. It's crazy.
It's insane. Are you living in some alternate timeline that didn't have inflation? Like on a good week, my family and we do all the same thing, gluten-free, organic, but we eat meat every night. So that probably affects it. And every morning, like we're eating a lot more meat than you, but like, I mean, it's like easily $350, $400 a week for 4 people.
Yeah. Okay. But you guys also, your kids are homeschooled. One of my kids packs a lunch for school and it's always the gluten-free peanut butter and jelly and chips and an apple. It's like right. The same thing. That's cheap. And then my other child eats lunch at school, which is like $1.50 a day or something. So the way I've done it is I have a Costco membership, which is, as you know, is like food in bulk. So the very first thing I did, actually, I didn't even know this was going to affect anything, is I did this major, major clean of the basement and garage. I might've even talked about it on the podcast, but like I had to make trips to my friend's dumpster at her business location because I had so much trash, and like, we just completely cleaned out the basement. And I put in shelves with labels and this and that. And now I suddenly had space in my kitchen because I moved things we didn't use down to the basement. And then I now suddenly had room for like volume. So instead of buying basmati rice in little 2-pound packets, I bought a huge like 20-pound bag of organic basmati rice. And when my container in the kitchen runs out, I just go to the basement and refill it. Did the same thing with chocolate chips and oatmeal and just like all the things that we use on a regular basis. I just bought in bulk at Costco, organic when possible, right? And it's in the basement and I just go refill it up. I keep them in like airproof bins. So there's that. The second thing I did is I stopped buying my meats expensively from Whole Foods and Sprouts. I bought them at Costco and I didn't realize that their organic meats and their free range meats are actually just as good a quality. You could not tell the difference.
Okay.
So then this is the other thing is that I bought these molds. I saw it on someone's Instagram and I bought them. So you saw the picture I sent you, Chris, mm-hmm. and I'll put it in the show notes. So I bought these 3 different molds. One is a 4-cup mold. So it's like a mold and it's kind of like a huge ice cube. That would be 1 4-cup ice cube. And then the other shape is 2 big rectangles and they're each 2 cups. So then you have 2 2-cup mold. And then a 4 by 1-cup mold. So then what I started doing is every time I cook, like anything, like rice, by the way, you reduce calorie intake and carb load by almost 60% when you freeze rice and then eat it later. It also tastes better. But like, let's say I make a big thing of rice, I'll make double now. And then I put them in the like 4 by 1-cup containers. And then I individually vacuum seal them. Mm-hmm. And then I freeze them. And so then like, if I just need a quick dinner for one person, I have a whole serving of rice, just boom, ready and go. And like, I made lamb like last week, I made shawarma and I bought a 6-pound leg of lamb and I did the math and it would give us dinner for 8 nights. It was like $1.20 per person per meal because I bought it in bulk and I added so many onions and herbs to it and shredded it. Anyways, the point is I've just learned to buy more in bulk. cook larger portions and then freeze dry them in these molds. So you put the mold in the fridge. The next day you take it out and it's in this perfect shape. And then you can just freeze. I keep saying freeze dry. Vacuum wrap, vacuum seal it.
Vacuum seal. And yeah, I was actually going to ask you, I was like, do you really freeze dry? That's amazing.
No, vacuum seal. But oh, but yeah, there's one more thing I wanted to say, and I haven't done it, but I'm going to do it this week, is whenever I buy like in bulk vegetables from Costco, like organic carrots, asparagus, or peas, like we never finish them all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to vacuum seal them with like butter and herbs, each in their own little pack. And I'm going to sous vide them all at one time, like, or sous vide all the carrots at one time, all the green beans at one time, all the asparagus at one time, and then freeze them. And that way, when I want to use them, I just take them out and warm them up, versus what I was doing before is when I want them, I take them out and sous vide them. I'm not doing that anymore. Like I'm going to sous vide all my steaks, then freeze them. And then when I'm ready to eat the steak, just thaw it out and reverse sear them. Do you see? Whereas before I was sous vide them on the night of the food. And it wastes so much time because that thing takes forever to warm up. Whereas now I can just like do it all en masse. And and for frame of reference, sous vide is just this way of like cooking food and water. And I'll put that in the show notes too.
Yeah. It's like,
the gold standard.
It is. It is. That's brilliant. Well done. Well done. I love it. Can I just like point out how funny it was that you're like, you know, I'm just like helping people walk and I'm like good at motivating. It's like, you're just like throwing that away. Like I'm just helping people walk again. No big deal. Like that's just par for the course, right?
I've been doing this for like 15 years. It is kind of just not, no. I know it's important to them and it seems like a big deal, but like when you do it every day, it doesn't feel like a big deal.
Yeah. I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot. We've learned a lot. Haven't we, Anna?
Yeah. I can't believe my husband said, what did you learn this year? I'm like, listen to the podcast. No, yes. I need to have a conversation with him. That was a bid maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. That was totally a bid. 100%. I learned that. I was joking with Anna the other day that I was like, the other day I like gave my husband like 7 or 8 bids over a time period. And he flubbed every single one of them in my view. Like I gave him this real softball about like, hey honey, you're like one of my best friends. And he was like, yeah, you're okay. Or you know what I mean? Like he got flustered and didn't say anything back to me. And then there was like another one as well. It was like, it kept happening. And I was like, fuck, come on, Luke, get the bid.
Take the bid.
Thank you. What are your hopes for 2025, Anna?
Okay. So one of my hopes is to be a bee charmer. Is to have beehives. And I have the online course for Oregon State University, which is so far away from Atlanta, but they apparently have the best online course. So I'm taking an online course in bees. I really, really hope I can get it finished before spring so I can get my bee colony and start having bees. And I don't even eat honey. I just want the bees around because bees are so good. Did you know that bees endangered? Are no longer endangered?
That's awesome.
Yeah. The other thing, my other hope is I really want to take the Kabbalah class that my stepdaughter's taking because it's that missing piece for her. And it kind of takes in all the teachings. It feels like the Course in Miracles and astrology and Matt Kahn and like all the things we've learned about, it seems to kind of put it in a new framework.
Yeah.
And I'm really liking what I'm seeing in her. So it's inspired me to take the course as well.
Yeah, what about it's also you? What Jewish mysticism. I think that's really cool that it's like, you know, level there. My hopes, I'm doing a 12 gifts of the solstice or 12 gifts of the Yule thing for all of my newsletter recipients. And one of the things I give away is the instructions for how to do the 13 gifts, which is this whole idea in which you write down 13 things that you want as your hopes. And then the universe takes care of 12 of them and you're in charge of just doing one of them. I think I told a story earlier about how funny it was that mine that I was supposed to do this year was like 60% passive income. And I realized that I said to somebody when I was describing what I do that I'm not in charge of 60% of what I do. And I was like, Okay, tricky. Like, I think you know what I meant, but like that I channel 20,
tricky.
60% of what I do, and the other 40% is me. And I was like, okay, I gotta be super, super clear.
Oh my gosh, that's
But
hilarious.
I'm gonna. It's same with my daughter. My daughter won a Taylor Swift concert and she dreamt of it. And it was right around that time that I realized that I had said the 60%, I like that I channel 60% of what I do. And so we're gonna have to work on that. If you guys want to have the instructions for it, you guys should sign up for that newsletter, for my newsletter. If you go to christinawiltsy.com, we'll put it in the show notes, but I'll give the instructions for that. But some of the things that I'm including in that is I'm doing this inner villain deck. I'm also really looking to form community and understand like the difficult parts of community, not just the social parts, like community governance and how do you like align everything for a common goal, things along those lines. As well as I'm gonna keep growing my fairy garden that I talked about. I have a fairy garden here, and I hope to be able to like grow that as well as get back in my own garden and look at the physical. I already mentioned that. The physical is kind of my thing this year. I think it might be my theme about like bringing things into physical reality and not just in the etheric. So those are my hopes for this year. There's a lot there, but yeah.
I love it. I love it. Okay, I can't wait to see your cards.
Yeah, it'll be
All
good.
right.
It'll be
Thanks,
good.
Chris. Happy New
Thanks,
Year.
Sue. Happy New Year. All right, take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of This Spiritual Fix. If you are interested in joining the 12 gifts that I, Christina, have on my website, go to www.christinawiltsy.com and click on Holiday Gift to sign up, including a huge $500 off practicums when working with me.
And remember,
humility, gratitude, acceptance, done.
Thank you for listening, TSF family, to our podcast. And I wanted to let you know, as Christina, that I have launched my new meditation store at www.playconscious.com. That's PlayConscious.com, where you can get all of my meditations, and it will also be the future home of the digitized versions of the TSF store. Thank you so much for your time and your support. And don't forget to use your TSF family code for an additional 20% off.